made more equitable. The IRS taxing system is unwieldy, unfair, old-fashioned, and overburdened, but it's here and we're stuck with it because no political leaders will step forward to suggest changes and follow through on those changes. The IRS is like a mini city which supports thousands of employees. Only when enough citizens demand of our government representatives that it is way past time for a change will anything happen. When a system is so unjust that large corporations making millions of dollars are legally able to use government-sanctioned loopholes so they pay no taxes whatsoever, it's time for a change. Will it happen? Probably not. Too many thousands work for the IRS and will be displaced. So what? The rest of us, the little people who have been carrying the load all these years, we're tired of it all. To replace the federal income tax, it's been suggested that there be a fair tax, which is essentially a sales tax. The so-called fair tax has been bandied about for some time. Briefly, fair taxation is dedicated to fully replacing all the revenue generated under the current federal income tax system with a single rate. There are 27 benefits from the fair tax, and here are a number of them. You keep 100% of your pay and pension. You never file a tax return. No more IRS. No audits of citizens. It has the lowest overall tax rate of any tax system. It eliminates all marriage tax penalties. All taxpayers are treated fairly. No loopholes for anyone or any corporation. Social Security benefits will no longer be taxed. No taxes in buying necessities for your family. Average family incomes will soar more than 10%. No taxes on the poor. Mortgage rates will drop between 20 to 30%. Small businesses would never have to track income or payroll tax withholdings or deductions. Even criminals will pay taxes when spending their ill-gotten gains. Those who take the most out of society by consuming more pay the most in taxes. Individuals will have more control. People can make choices about how much to pay in taxes by deciding when and what to buy. Used goods are not taxed. Tax evasion will decrease. It is easier to hide income and overstate deductions than it is to hide consumption. And finally, the fair tax is more suitable for the information age, the age of non-traceable transactions with the advent of the Internet. For KSCO and KOMY, this is Kay Swirling.
Thank you, Kay, and welcome to Hour 1 of the Saturday Special.
Good morning, a brighter day is here. Good morning, may we bring you cheer.
We've got time, we've got tunes, we've got time, tunes, and temperature.
Get up and go, it's today, you know, on KSCO Radio.
Your host from now till noon. Sitting in for MZ on the Saturday special. And I was going to say we have an exciting show planned today. But a more accurate statement by we might be that it should be an interesting show.
Good morning. Now stay right here on KSCO Radio.
What is wrong with our current tax system? Do you think you pay too much to the federal government in taxes?
What a stupid question.
Just what is a fair tax? With a fair tax, will the average American have more money? Join us this Saturday on the Saturday Special from 10 a.m. to noon with guest host Vernon and Steve Hayes of fairtax.org. That's this Saturday on the Saturday Special on your...
If you're going to rob me, at least put on a mask.
Radio station AM 1080 KSCO.
I like that. If you're going to rob me, at least put on a mask. Instead of the dark suits, dark power suits and red ties, eh? My name's Vernon Vohr, a.k.a. Vernon, a.k.a. V-Cubed. Sitting in for MZ on a Saturday special. And today, our subject matter will be the fair tax. We should have a guest up soon, Steve Hayes. But I listened to Kay's editorial, the whole thing was... revolved around the current tax system, the current IRS tax system, where we have a graduated tax rate. Some people pay more than others. The tax rates go from approximately 15% up to around 30%. And our current tax system also collects Social Security taxes. So right off the top, 7.65% of your income is whisked away for Social Security. Your employer matches that. Those go into funds to pay you some sort of a Social Security stipend when you reach the ripe, old or young age, however you want to look at it, of 65. And people have complained. They said that we're just taxed too high. Not everyone, of course. We do have those out there that think that 30% for rich people is way too little. But that being said, most of us think that we're overtaxed. And so there are a variety of propositions on the table. There's the flat tax. We will not be discussing that today per se, unless my guest doesn't call in. And there's the fair tax. And the fair tax, as I understand it, to give you kind of a brief overview, is there's no income tax. What you just strictly wind up paying is a flat 23% on all goods purchased. Flat 23% as I read it, and you keep all your money, and basically the revenues that are collected are just a function of what you buy. Now, the tax will be placed on all goods and services, and it's that simple. And to deal with people that are low income, my reading of the fair tax is that, in fact, what happens is everyone gets their tax amount reduced by the amount of taxes that are exempted currently based on the poverty level. Sounds pretty simple, eh? Sounds pretty good. So all that matters, you pick up your paycheck, you don't have to worry about filing taxes. You don't have to do anything like that. You just, in fact, get your money, spend it. The government gets its share of the money that you spend. So it looks like my guest is on the line. And I will bring him up here and let him introduce himself, and then we can start discussing this. Steve, you're on the air.
Vern, how are you, sir?
I'm very good. Nice to have you as a guest. So you are from fairtax.org.
Yes, sir, I am.
Okay. Can you, did you hear what I had to say about fair tax?
I heard a little bit of it. I just got on the line about 30 seconds ago.
Okay. I'll let you take it away. Basically, what I told the people, my quick reading of the fair tax is, do away with all taxes as we in fact know them. And there's a flat 23% tax on all goods and services. And the short of the long is it's adjusted in such a fashion so that those that are at the lower end of the income spectrum don't pay fundamentally any tax because they're everybody's rebated, as I understand, the amount equivalent to the poverty level in taxes.
I think you said it all. Maybe the show's over.
Oh, no.
No, I think
it sounds too good to be true, but go ahead.
Well, I think it's what you said is very accurate. I think the one thing that initially is a little troublesome to people is the idea of 23% on goods and services, and I think we want to underscore, Vern, that the 23% is not a value-added tax like some of your listeners may have encountered in Europe, where it's on every step of the production process. It's only at the retail level with our tax. So in other words, all of the costs that are passed on from one manufacturer to a distributor to a wholesaler to a retailer, there is no tax at all until the final purchase by a consumer.
Right. So you walk in as a consumer. There's no tax dollars change hands with anyone until you as a consumer walk in the store, grab that whatever it is, pack of cigarettes, that video tape, that DVD, that video player, that television off the shelf, go up to the register, and they ring it up, and that's when your taxes are assessed.
That is exactly correct. If you're a person who is, you know, providing a service, you know, such as, well, let's take it even easier. Let's say someone comes to paint your house. You're going to pay the painter a sales tax on the job itself. However, the painter is not going to pay any taxes up until the point where he charges you for the tax. So there is no built-in tax under this plan. It's very simple. The only person that ever has to pay the tax is, as you correctly stated, the consumer at the retail level.
So the painter, I did read that, and I did not follow it all the way through. So when the painter goes to buy the paint that he uses on his on your house, he doesn't pay a tax on that?
That's correct. And the reason is, just like it is now with a resale permit, painters, other people who regularly will buy things to put into a final product, like at in most states, they would have to pay a sales tax if it were personal use. In other words, if you and I go down to the paint store to buy a can of paint, we're going to pay a sales tax, state sales tax. We would pay a federal sales tax the same way. But if a gentleman comes up and he's going to paint our house, he can buy that paint, he can buy the paintbrushes, he can buy the thinner, he can buy the rollers, all the other equipment. And he shows up, he paints our house, and he charges us for the job, and we pay a sales tax on that. But he does not pay a tax on his equipment because it's going into the final retail product, which is a painted house for us.
Well, Steve, that all sounds really good, almost too good to be true. Let me throw the first fly in the ointment, so to speak.
Sure.
How is an underground cash economy affected? How would that affect this?
Well, I think you're going to see, first of all, it's always
it just
be
came good. It just came up because the painter comes up and says, "Hey, tell you what, got
well,
a deal
happens,
for you."
You know, the thing is, and I think this is really important, Vernon. You've hit it right on the nose. You know, I don't think, and I've read books on taxes, and I've read some very good text on the history of taxation. I don't think there's ever been a civilization that did not have an underground economy. I don't think there will ever be a civilization that doesn't have an underground economy. The idea is you've got a system now that's, I think, fatally flawed. You've got a system that's being evaded by some numbers, 40 to 50% of the people, you know, in small or large part. You've got a system that is, frankly, hurting our economy because of the way it punishes American workers and manufacturers and rewards people who send products into our country, importers, which we can talk about later if you like. So you've got a system that's really bad. Nobody likes filling out tax forms. Nobody enjoys the idea of having this hammer of the IRS over their head for 3 or 4 years after they file. And here we've got a system that says we're going to do a lot of things right that the present system is doing wrong. But we're still going to take money out of your pocket, Vern. You're not going to like that, and some people are not going to like it to the point where they're just going to try not to pay it. And well, so you are going to have that painter that shows up, and he is going to say to you, "Hey, Vern, hey, let me do this house, and I'll charge you 15% less. I won't charge you the sales tax, so you'll save, 15%. And you look at it and say, "Okay, that's fine." Well, under the present system, that happens all the time. And it's very, very difficult to catch. But let me tell you an example of what's going to happen under the sales tax, and starting to happen now under state sales taxes. If that painter goes and he buys that paint with a resale permit, meaning that he's going to buy it to use for retail,
yes,
he has to have his number attached to the purchase. where Ernie Dronenberg, who was the vice chairman of the Board of Equalization, which collects the sales tax in California, he explained to me that what they are now doing, and they didn't do this 15 years ago, but they're now doing it more and more, they're matching the resale permit purchases with the retail sales accounts. And if those vary by more than a certain percentage in each business, you get a visit. So that painter who does this, if he does it for his father-in-law, probably never get caught. But if he does it very often, and you have to do it pretty often to make it worthwhile, he's going to get caught because he's going to have bought a lot of paint that he can't explain what he did with it.
Either that or he's going to have to pay the tax on the paint anyway.
Well, and this is what Ernie said. That what happens when they catch him doing this, they either A, revoke their resale permit, which puts them, in effect, you know, out of business, or B, they make them pay the tax plus penalties. So it's a much more difficult situation whether you have, I mean, the classic example I used to get on the radio was a fellow who said, my brother owns an appliance store. I'm just not going to pay sales tax of any kind when I buy, you know, a refrigerator. And the problem comes back the same way. He filed his resale permit when he bought that refrigerator so he wouldn't have to pay the tax for resale.
Yes.
And they match it up. And they have got this so sophisticated in California, and I understand from Ernie, almost all the states now are doing it that have sales taxes, that's 45 states, that they literally can match up the purchases and predict, based on their sampling and all, what they should have in inventory at the end of the year and what they should have sold. And if it varies by a certain amount, they get a visit.
Well, you know, I know that would have been my second question is what about all the internet business and stuff right now? Is if you do business over the internet, would you automatically include the taxes in the price there?
Yes, yes. Yeah. Internet taxation is exactly the same. I mean, in other words, this particular bill taxes the internet in exactly the same way that it would tax a local purchase.
Well, you know what it sounds like at the top of it, for example, is it sounds like it would be more fair, it's fairer to everyone, clearly, because everyone's paying their taxes, but one group of people that seems that would definitely benefit from this are the independent business people who currently right now pay both halves of the Social Security tax.
Absolutely. Absolutely. It would be an enormous benefit, and when you have businesses, whatever size they are, being rewarded by not having to pay that 7.5% on wages on the Social Security, or the 15%, if you're, like you said, if they're independent contractors, they have their own business, those people are going to be able to use the money to do a number of things, and usually most of them aren't going to put it in the bank. They're going to expand their business. They're going to use it to probably increase their payroll.
Well, you mentioned something when I brought up the cash economy. Certainly one of the things that gets put forth is that ultimately, I think it's been said that most people understand that in a working society, you need some sort of taxation for the running of the society, and people are not particularly opposed to paying taxes per se. They're against paying confiscatory taxes.
Yes.
And so that this whole business of tax evasion, if you want to call it that, is more or less a reaction to what people consider to be a corrupt system.
I think you're correct. I would say that to a point. I think you've got another, you know, maybe 20% of the people evading taxes who are just going to evade because they want a free ride.
Or to show they can do it.
Yeah, maybe that is as well. But the majority of the evasion, and this is interesting, too. I am introduced sometimes as recovering tax attorney because that's what I did for a long time.
Yes.
Then I quit. And I can tell you that a lot of the evasion that takes place is not what most people consider evasion. For example, the guy who is an independent business person and who never has a non-business meal. In other words, every time he goes out to eat, he deducts it.
Yes.
He makes it in some way related to his business in his mind is justified, but it's not according to the exact IRS code when they do that. You have lots of people who write off things, you know, they spent 5 minutes discussing business and they write off the entire meal. And you have situations where people who take trips, they take their wife along and it's a business deduction because she did go to, you know, one lunch with them or something. And I'm not criticizing these people because all of us have done some things similar to this in the past. It's just that because of the income tax system, it is so full, like Swiss cheese. There are so many exceptions to every rule and so many judgment calls that, you know, when Money Magazine used to do its polls, they pretty much stopped now. They can't get people to do them. But they used to have these accountants do hypothetical tax returns.
Yes.
And they would have 20 accountants 1 year, 50 1 year, and they all got different answers.
You know, that's what I was going to say, is that what you brought up in terms of what some people may, in fact, call tax evasion is a difference in opinion.
That's all it is.
In the interpretation of the law, and not truly tax evasion. I'm saving my hard questions till the end. I want you to know that.
Well, that's totally fine. I'm enjoying this, Bert.
And I'm glad that you're a tax attorney, because you'll be able to answer one of the big ones I have. People, the telephone numbers are 479-1080, 477-1340. I saw in here it says that that certain things will still continue to be untaxed. What it says, it said, is the 23% fair tax revenue neutral higher or lower when compared to income and Social Security taxes people pay today? And on the second page from the website, it says, because a 23% fair tax rate of 23% on every dollar spent is not imposed on necessities.
That's, well, the way that is
so I guess the question is,
go ahead, I'm sorry.
Does the 23% include necessities?
Yes, it does. Yes, it does. But the way it's worded that way is it's trying to as much as possible mimic the way the income tax is set up. They say that you don't pay income taxes in your basic needs, and the way they accomplish that is by giving you a deduction from income.
Yes.
For what is considered to be, in effect, the poverty level spending necessary for each individual and or family unit. Well, their tax does the same thing. What's been into it, and you brought this up before, is that there is a rebate, or in this case, really, it's called really more a prebate, in that you get it the first of the month, not after you spend the money. But the idea is that if a family of four is going to have 20, and it varies a little bit by area, but say $24,000 of poverty level spending is necessary. In other words, if you don't spend $24,000 for the family of four, you're considered below the poverty level.
Yes.
In your spending. The taxes, the fair tax, the 23%, on that $24,000 is going to be rebated to you on a monthly basis. And I'm just going to quickly say, let's say that was $6,000. It's going to come back to you at $500 a month. So when you go make the purchase, Vernon, you're going to pay the tax. However, you've had a rebate, or prebate in this case, of $500 to use to pay on that $2,000 of purchases you just made. Does that make sense?
Yes, yes,
okay.
Yes.
So in effect, as far as anybody is concerned, that basic cost of living that's defined now as the poverty level is not taxed. However, for simplicity, and just like with the income tax, for simplicity, you don't go to a store and give them a card and they calculate whether it's, you know, you've reached your poverty level or not, and they have to go through all these mechanics. What we do is simply go pay purchase at the store, pay the tax, and using our money that we got it prebated to us, to offset the tax. So that purchase effectively is tax-free. That's a long explanation.
Well, I'll use one quick analogy.
Sure.
It's you don't get rebated or prebated it this way, but when you do your income taxes, everyone, if you don't wish to itemize, gets a standard deduction.
Absolutely.
A certain amount that comes off the top that says you don't owe that. You've, in effect, based on the tax system, paid it.
That's correct.
As the government's concerned, and basically what you're saying and what I read last night is that instead of doing it that way, is that over the 12 months of the year, you are automatically given, rebated back what your taxes would be based on a poverty level over
That's
the 12-month
right.
period, you already have the money ahead of time, whether
That's
you
right.
whether you spend it or not. So it already accounts for what you would spend in taxes at the poverty level so that nothing's coming out of your pocket till you exceed that. Did I do
That's
okay on that?
You've absolutely stated it correctly. And most people are going to find that the net cost for the lower-income people who are perhaps struggling more than others are going to find that their effective tax out of their pocket, therefore their effective spending that they can do, is increased under the fair tax because they're not having that 7.5% taken off the top for Social Security.
Actually, they're coming out a little bit better based on what we just said, because not only are they not having 7.5% taken out, they get the full amount of their paycheck. They get their rebate in addition to that, starting them out at a higher spending base,
That's
albeit
right.
that gets canceled out if they spend that money anyway. So,
well, it basically comes out even, but they typically, the examples that we have done, typically the lower income people, I'm talking about someone making $30,000 with a family of four, something like that,
yes,
is going to save about $1,000 over in taxes what they would have paid. Now, that's just an example. Obviously, it can vary based upon how you spend. Let me give you an example. Under the fair tax, there's a principle that's being applied here, which I think is very sane, and I think from an economic point of view, very sane, and that is you only tax items once. In other words, you buy a car right off the showroom floor. If you sell that car, it's a used vehicle. It is not subject to the fair tax. Used property is not subject to the fair tax. Under the income tax, of course, it is taxed multiple times. It's taxed, you know, when you buy it. It's taxed when you sell it to somebody else, if you make a profit, which in cars you normally don't. But all the way through the progression of that item, it can be taxed 20 times. Whereas under the fair tax, we only tax items once. So let's go back to that family of four in the poverty level and use your example of someone who's getting the prebate.
Yes.
If they primarily choose to buy a used car, for example, there's no tax on that. They don't pay any fair tax on the payments on that car.
Because the taxes on that car were already paid.
They have already been paid once.
It's kind of like I've often wondered, this is tangential, how the state justifies vehicle registration fees every year. As long as the car doesn't change the registered owner, it's just a tax grab.
All it is a tax grab that they have figured out that most people will tolerate.
They put a little bit of lipstick on the pig, and
right.
people have not complained about it because, you know, as long as the ownership of my car doesn't change, why should I register it every year? They know who it belongs to. Nothing's changed at all. It's just the money grab. Listen, I have some callers on the line.
Certainly.
If I lose you, I'm going to I'll have my call screener call you back, but Perfect. I'm going to have to put you on hold, I think, to do this right. So
okay.
just bear with me, and if I screw it up, we'll get you back, okay? Hang on a second, Steve. We're going to find out here.
I'm on.
I know you're on. I'm going to take this caller. If I lose you, I'm going to have him call you back and figure out how to do this. Bruce, I lost him. Bruce, you're on the air.
Oh, hi, Vernon.
Hi.
See, I've done a lot of thinking about this tax, and I think I've talked to everybody about it, probably even you.
Yes.
I talked to Bob.
Hang on, Steve, call him back, and then I need to figure out how to get both these people on at the same time. Go ahead.
Okay. Yeah, I even talked to Bob Brinker about it. And what I would do, that's a little different from this, is instead of giving everybody a check at the beginning of the month, I would just exempt the things the poor people are more likely to buy. For instance, make the first $5,000 on any vehicle tax-free. So if you buy a Mercedes for $55,000, you pay taxes on $50,000 of it. But if you buy a used truck for $3,000, you don't pay any taxes. Make the first $10 of any item of clothing tax-free. And just have the basic level that's exempt. I would say food would not have taxes. I would say some medical would. I would put a tax on a sales tax, a transaction tax, I'll call it, on real estate. Because it's not going to raise the price of a house. The houses are, they sell houses for as much as they can get. And if you put a tax on it, that just means that the profit's going to be down a little bit.
So basically what you're recommending is a certain fraction of the sales price is exempt.
Depending on what it is. For instance, yes, there wouldn't be any exemption on yachts, you know. But for clothing, for food, for cars, you know, transportation, the first, there's a threshold that would be exempt, and then anything over that would be taxed at a certain rate. Now, it also taxed every single step, and the reason for that is because your tax could be much lower because there'd be a multiplying factor, the incentive to cheat would be much less. I mean, for instance, let's say, I don't know how this would work, but let's say it was a 7% tax, but when the iron ore got sold, it would be taxed at 7%. When that got turned into steel, the steel products would be taxed at 7%. And when the car company bought the sheet metal, it would be taxed, but it would be straight, no deductions. Because, see, a value-added tax is just a clever way for an accountant to prove that he didn't make money. So if you can't make it in business with a straightforward tax, you shouldn't be in that business.
Well, let me see if I can get Steve back on here, and I may have to have you run some of that by him again. There's a tricky way to do this, and I'm trying to remember how to do it. If I lose you now, Bruce, call back, okay?
Okay.
There we go. Are you on the air, Steve?
I am, Bernard. How are
okay.
you?
There we go. I was trying to lock him. I couldn't remember how to do it. I think he's locked right now, isn't he? Huh? Okay. Go ahead. Bruce, can you give a quick rendition of that to Steve?
Okay.
What's basically the short of the long, as I understood Bruce, is instead of having everything taxed, every dollar, he was saying a certain amount on certain items would be exempt from being taxed up to a certain amount. Like, let's say it was a car that you bought. Car's $20,000. The first $5,000 of it was exempt for taxes. And then go on from there, Bruce.
That's right. Well, see, you wouldn't have to send everybody a check that way.
Okay. He's trying to get around having to rebate people.
It would make it simpler, therefore cheaper. You wouldn't have to have that agency sending out checks.
Well,
but you just exempt the first threshold amount of things that poor people need from taxation. The first $10 on any item of clothing, for instance. If you buy clothes at a thrift store, you're not paying any taxes. If you buy a pair of Levi's for $35, you're paying taxes on $25 of that. I think that it should be taxed every single step of the way because it would be a straightforward tax, the same amount at every step, but it would be much lower because there'd be a multiplying effect, but the incentive to cheat would be much less.
If there are a couple of things. If what you're talking about is a system that has been effective in Europe.
No. I'm not talking about value-added tax.
Well, that's what it sounded like.
No. It gets taxed every step along the way. It's a straight transaction tax.
And okay, a transaction tax.
Yeah.
Okay, well, they've tried that in Europe, and frankly, the various parts, Bruce, and I don't know that your plan has got any flaws. It's certainly hugely superior to what we have. So let me start off by saying that. You and I will agree on much more than we disagree, because if we can eliminate the tax on income and put it onto consumption, there isn't an economist around, even ones who have been lukewarm on this idea, who don't believe that a consumption tax is going to increase the health of the economy and move things forward. So you and I totally agree on the way we tax consumption as opposed to income.
Right. Now, I don't see what's wrong with putting a tax on houses.
Well, there is a tax on houses, the fair tax.
Well,
it's just not on used houses.
No. I mean, every single time a house gets sold, I don't see what's wrong with taxing it. See, it wouldn't be a 23% tax. It would be a much lower rate tax.
Well, see, and here's the issue. That is nothing wrong with it. There's nothing right with it. I mean, it's really an arbitrary decision that people make.
It's one of the fewest things that people ever do in their life is buy and sell a house.
Well, here's the thing that I would say, though, in terms of most of the other parts of this. Ideally, we may end up with Congress with something more like what you're saying, because it does give the appearance that the rate is lower and therefore it's more there. But it's going to have to end up taking the same amount of money out of your pocket and mine in order to be revenue neutral.
Yeah, and I think people will resent the tax much less if it's a lower rate and to be less
prone. Well, but it's still a bit of a fraud, though, Bruce, because one of the reasons why I like this tax, the sales tax, and I've looked at flat taxes and transactional taxes and looked the GST taxes, the goods and services taxes that were in Europe. I looked at all these things. And one of the reasons that I liked this particular tax the best was it was much more transparent.
You know, the thing is, you're one of these hair shirt guys. You don't mind, you know, intellectually knowing that it's a more pure tax. But the problem is you're going to have to get it passed. And to get it passed, enough people are going to have to vote for it. And, there's going to be a lot of people that aren't going to vote for 23%
tax. Well, you're correct. There are a lot of people that resist it. But here's the truth. The truth is that whether you call it a 1% transactional tax, which I've seen on let me finish first.
Yeah.
It has to come up to the same amount of money out of Vernon's pocket. There is, and I say the same amount, it has to average the same amount of gross taxation. The question is, what is, in my mind, what's the simplest and most efficient way of doing it?
Well, I understand, but I think this also might help imports.
I'm going to have to let you wrap it up here and stuff, because I got a lot of other people on the line.
Well, people that bring in imports, they would get taxed before they sold them again.
But they would get taxed under our tax much differently than under yours.
Yeah,
under yours, it'd be 7%. Under mine, it'd be 23%.
Yeah, but they get 7% a couple times.
On import? I don't see how they would.
Oh,
all right.
When they cross the border.
Well, listen, we're going to have to move on from that one.
Thanks, Vernon.
But that's some good points. What we have going on here, one comment I might make on that is much like the writing of the Constitution, the founding fathers that wrote that damn thing had the Federalist Papers. And clearly, to get this in place, there's going to have to be a sales job because on the first look, people say 23%. And without realizing all the other hidden stuff they're paying that's not being stated.
That's right. And if you take an example, and we're working the final finishing touches off, it'll be on the website very shortly. It might even be up today. I haven't looked. But it's a calculator.
Yes. And Thor, you're on the air. So as soon as Steve wraps up here, you jump in.
Well, all I was going to say is that way each individual who's listening to us or who's interested in this can take and fill in their personal situation and see what their tax would be under the fair tax. In most cases, it's going to be no more, and in most cases, less.
Thor, take it away.
Good morning. I like the idea of changing the tax situation, but I think one thing your proposed system doesn't really address, and that's the issue of incentives. For instance, if the government wants to try to propose for people to adopt new technology like solar power or hybrid cars, things like that, they can say, all right, if you buy, put solar electricity in your house, you can get tax credits for the whole installation or a part of it or something like that. And, there's a lot of social engineering and things like that. I'm not sure if that's the exact proper term to use, but there's lots of things that the government can try to entice people to do and as a incentive to give them tax breaks and stuff like
that. So you're saying the current system of taxes has ways of encouraging people to spend their money on things that could be socially good, not from a socialistic standpoint, but like you just brought up the fact of solar panels and solar electricity and stuff.
Yeah, the one problem, Thor, from a purist point of view,
mm-hmm.
and I think depending upon your interpretation of what government should do, I've met most of the congressmen.
Mm-hmm.
Most of them, I think, are very social people, very nice people. Not some of them aren't, perhaps, but most of them are pretty sharp. I've met a great number of people that work in the Department of the Treasury and other departments. And the last thing I want is them determining for me what is socially beneficial to me.
Sure.
And so one of the problems with the present income tax is that if it were as clean and nice as you stated, I think it'd be great. But one of the problems is that they will have certain things that some member of Congress believes is important, regardless of what everybody else believes.
Mm-hmm.
They can build into the income tax, and they can give a break, and you don't even know it. Under the sales tax, the thing that I like about it is that if there is going to be a break, and I don't see any reason why a lot of people wouldn't support this. For solar, for example, they can simply, in Congress, have an amendment or have a law passed that says, instead of paying 23% on your purchase of solar panels this year,
mm-hmm.
you're going to pay zero.
Okay, well, that's a good point.
That's something that they can do. the advantage to that I like is that everybody in the country knows when they carve out some special interest. So instead of all the corporations and all the lobbyists being able to come in and under the table get benefits that we don't ever see,
mm-hmm.
it's very focused. And also, if you're doing it this way and the government's got to get a certain amount of money in, if they're making more money, which they will be, in fact, this is one of the criticisms I've actually had of this tax, is that it will, because of the growth in the economy, it will generate a lot more money than the present system. Because as the economy grows and as you tax imports, which we don't now, and make them pay the same tax as American products, you're going to be bringing more money into the Treasury.
Yeah.
And the issue here is, you know, can we make these guys not be as much like drunken sailors?
Well, hopefully.
Well, you know, Steve, you just said something that on the www.fairtaxvolunteer.org.
Yes, sir.
On the facts, what it says is, why not just exempt food and medicine from tax? Wouldn't that be fair and simple? And the comment is that that opens things up for special interest, and yet I just heard you say that Congress could exempt.
Well, they can. They can do all of these things. Right? The reason why we're trying to keep it pure going in.
Oh, I got it.
You know, is that, I mean, we're not so naive that we think that they're going to do what's best for the country.
You're trying to start off with a level playing field.
That's right. We're trying not to be giving up yards.
We're trying to give up the current corruption, at least start anew, if new corruption comes in, so we can see where various pockets might be lined.
That's exactly,
I do have a
ahead,
quick question about the current system.
Yes.
You know, we hear that people like, you know, very wealthy people like Warren Buffett and I guess Bill Gates, something like that, they don't pay any taxes at all, that they're able to get, you know, write-offs and loopholes and all that. And I'm just wondering, in actuality, is that true that you can get so many write-offs and deductions and everything that you don't pay any taxes at all? Or are they paying at least some small amount? I mean, what's the reality in that?
Most of them are paying some amount, yes.
Yeah.
You're the tax attorney. You should be able to answer this for us.
But you know, I think the best thing I can tell you, without revealing any client confidences, because I had a number of very wealthy clients that mm-hmm. paid less tax than my secretary. But let's take the best example, I think, today, which is I gave a talk to a special meeting up in Washington about 4 or 5 years ago. They called themselves the wealthy families. And these were people who were from families with vast inherited wealth. I won't mention the names, but many of them are familiar to you. And these people were there, about 35, 40 people in this conference room. And one of the younger guys wanted me to give a presentation on the fair tax. And I did. And it was very, very lukewarm and received.
Sure.
And afterwards, I went outside, and this gentleman and his father came out, and they thanked me, and they said, you know, it actually went about the way we thought it would go. And I said, why is that? And they said, well, we're not really worried about the income tax. We got that handled.
They don't have the fair tax, eh?
But under the fair tax, we'd pay a lot more tax.
Oh, yeah.
And so, to a large extent, there is no way to tax people who have a lot of wealth. And in fact, one of the areas where people evade tax is they just put it offshore.
Mm.
But if you bring it on to spend, you're going to pay a tax under the fair tax, whereas under the income tax, lots and lots of spending goes on in wealthy areas that is, let's just say, maybe subject to the state sales tax, but nothing else.
One thing I think that we could possibly consider doing with the current system, and you would probably be able to know if this wouldn't work, but what if we just had a minimum that everybody has to pay no matter what? I mean, yeah, you get your deductions and write-offs and all, but everybody has to pay 5% or 10%, whatever it is, but there's no way you can get out of that. So that way, at least across the board, everybody is paying something. You know, maybe you have
So you're talking about a hybrid.
Yeah, a hybrid, right. Mm-hmm. So you still have the, you know, they can still do charitable donations or, you know, have business losses or whatever, but you just get a certain point that everybody has to pay no matter what, and then that way you won't have these, you know, the super wealthy getting around not paying anything at all, or, you know, the very small amount like
that. Yeah, the only way that I can think of, though, to really enforce that Yeah. Is with more and more government people coming in and checking and watching or putting somebody, you know, in the back seat of the Bill Gates' car all the time.
Sure.
Because it's just very, very difficult to monitor. Whereas a sales tax is very easy. Bill Gates, for all of his wealth, he still buys food.
He buys all sorts of stuff, yes.
Yes, and he doesn't buy a used car, is my guess. He buys a new car.
And my only concern about this, I could see it may stifle the economy in a sense that people may not be buying things as much because they say, well, you know, I want to buy this nice big new car or this big screen TV or whatever, but gosh, I have to pay the, you know, 20-some percent in taxes and all that. So maybe we'll just stick with our own old car for a couple of years, or we'll use our old, tube TV for a while or something.
Well, except for the fact, Thor, when you look, when you go to the website, is you already start off with a base of around, I think it's $4,283 that everyone gets back per year that you don't pay in taxes.
Offset
your taxes, because that's the poverty level tax. So if you're poor, you're not effectively paying tax on any of that stuff if you do save up your pennies to buy it.
Mm-hmm.
And people like Bill Gates do have to, you know, pay for everything above that. Got to go, Thor.
Yeah,
any last
thanks.
Comment and stuff?
No, that's it looks definitely interesting.
Thanks so much. That was Thor in Monterey. We're going to go on to Joan here. I want to keep these callers going. I'm going to drop my bomb after the top of the hour, Steve, because I got a good one for you. I have what I think could be a donkey in the joint, but we'll see. Joan, you're on the air.
Yes, hi.
John.
How are you today?
Good.
Listen, your conversation is just so interesting that everything your callers say get me kind of excited. One thing about the last caller and being concerned about stifling the economy, frankly, we're an economy on paper, on credit cards. I think it might be good that we might conserve a little and think twice before we buy the brand new car or whatever. And then secondly, about the discussion about someone asked about the very rich, how can they end up not paying any tax. I do remember years ago, and I don't know why this occurred, but President Nixon had a personal tax bill while he was president of $700-something.
Right.
I'm sure as a tax lawyer you would understand however that happened. I must say I didn't understand it. I thought, wow. And then these are, you can comment on after. And then the next thing, I'm a mom with two little kids, and I thought, oh, I think I should learn how to do our own taxes. I have a pretty good sense of math and numbers. So I went to this is down south in California, a little junior college for an evening class on taxes. I got a book that was like a law book, probably, 4-5 inches fat, and all about the taxes, how to do them. The professor stated, he put it, that he's working as a CPA 40 hours a week, so don't expect too much help from him. And I thought, oh, okay, well, I'm on my own. So I started this class, and I ended up auditing it for 2 weeks. We just were touching the tip of the iceberg, and it was to do exemptions. My gosh, I was getting 20% and 30% on my test. I couldn't even do square one, exemptions. That's how complicated it is. So my husband and I, of course, now have somebody do our taxes. But, you know, if you can't do that little short form that you could do when you're single, easy as pie, things get awfully complicated. And my last comment is I think the fair taxes, I think it's a terrific innovation, far better than what we have.
Well, you know, one thing I might say, Joan, is, Steve, I've heard say that the IRS is inaccurate to the rate of 10 to 20% in their calculations.
At least. In fact, they used to have an error rate of 40% when you called for help. I think it's gone down. So, in other words, their helpline?
Yes, yes.
And then, of course, if you relied on what they said and it was wrong, you were still wrong because you couldn't rely on what they said.
Right, and you can't be wrong.
Yeah. But, Joan, I think you made some very good points. The one thing, Joan, also I think that kind of fits in with what you said and with what Thor said is that one of the things the income tax has done in withholding has disguised what we pay because when, you know, Thor made the point about buying a car and he said, you know, well, what about going out and buying a new car? Well, if you go out and buy a $20,000 car today, how much is it going to cost you in terms of earnings to pay for a $20,000 car? How much do you have to make in order to net $20,000 under the current law? Most people are going to have to make pretty close to $30,000 or more in order to pay the Social Security tax, pay the income tax, and net the $20,000. You see what I'm saying here,
Joan?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Whereas under the sales tax, you go out and buy that $20,000 car, and you're going to pay your 23%. You're going to pay $4,000, $5,000, $6,000 in tax, and that is going to be your tax. It's very apparent. So for most of us, when we go out and make these purchases, we go out and we buy the new washing machine. Let's say we get one of those really nice ones for $1,000. Most of us had to make $1,500, $1,600 to pay the taxes and net the $1,000. So we're already paying the tax, and that was why I was saying before, any tax system that comes in, if it funds the government the same way, is going to take the money out of our pocket. Its question is it taking it out in the most efficient way for us? Forget the government. What's easiest for Joan?
Mm-hmm.
It's easiest for Joan to throw away all those records
mm-hmm.
and not have to worry about it.
And going to school and not making it.
That's right. Yeah.
No wonder we have tax attorneys, huh?
Yeah, how many people can afford them?
That's actually part of the point. And I had a sort of epiphany a number of years ago in 86 and got out of it. But that was the problem all the way through this, is that the income tax actually hid the true cost of our system.
Joan, I'm going to let you go. Is that okay?
Thank you. It is, and thank you so much. Keep up the good work.
Sure, certainly appreciate the call. I am going to integrate my commercials for this hour and the next hour, because I wasn't very good at doing that, because I wanted to hear what the people have to say. Neil, I'm going to bring you up, and I won't cut you off. I need to hold you over past the hour. We'll do that, okay? Because you've been on hold a long time. Hello?
Hello?
Neil.
Yes.
Thanks for your patience.
Well, two quick questions before I make my comments. First, is labor taxed?
Labor taxed in what way, Neil?
Well, suppose somebody gives you a haircut or washes your house.
Yes, sir. Those are taxable, at the retail level, taxable services. You go get a haircut, and you pay $10 for the haircut, you're going to pay sales tax.
All right. Well,
One second, though, Neil. This is just a point I'm trying to make to compare the two. When you go get a haircut under the income tax, you had to make $12, $13, $14, $15 to pay the $10. You just didn't see it because it was withheld from your check.
No, I understand what you're saying, but I'm actually going in an entirely different direction.
Oh, I'm sorry. Go ahead, please.
And the second quick question is, do you still pay state sales tax?
Yes, you do. The difference, though, if they conform to the fair tax model, like in California, the rate drops down for state income tax and sales tax to about 6.5%. Total. So in California, we'd be paying 30%, but we wouldn't be paying state income tax or any other state sales tax.
All right, let me give you some general feedback on your proposition. I definitely think the fair tax is superior to what we have now. There's no question about that for a variety of reasons, but I think that any tax scheme whatsoever will be eventually sorely and seriously compromised because of something called human nature. For instance,
Neil, I'm going to have you hold it at that because we're top of the hour, and that was a great statement that you left the people thinking, and I'll pick you up right after the top of the hour, okay?
All right.
Okay, thanks so much. We're at the end of the hour. Hang on there, Steve. We will pick
we'll
this up after the top of the hour. Thanks.
Sure.
KSCO Santa Cruz, and now it is time for Fox News.
Fox News.
Dense fog and...
Oh, hello, darling. I hate to hang up on you, but I'm sorry, baby, but I have to go. It's time for that wonderful record show. I'd love to visit, but you'll have to call back. KSCO has the inside track.
Vernon Bohr, a.k.a. Vernon, a.k.a. VQ. I'll be your host for the remainder of the hour on the Saturday special, In for MZ. And we are discussing the fair tax. For those of you that just tuned in, my guest is Steve Hayes, a reformed tax attorney. How's that, Steve?
That sounds good, Vernon.
And let's go back to Neil. So, Neil, you were saying before the top of the hour that that no matter what we come up with, these are not your words, so correct me, but the genre is the larceny in people's souls make any tax system circumventable or inefficient?
Absolutely. Let me put it this way, that the reason why any tax system, including a vastly superior one like the fair tax, will become deeply compromised is because of human nature. And under human nature, people operate in their own self-interest. I'll divide that into two groups, politicians and private citizens. First, the politicians. Politicians are involved in the activity of buying votes with other people's money. And so in their own self-interest, they will promise all sorts of things to voters. As an example, Bruce called earlier and mentioned, and this is just made for the Democratic platform, a threshold. In other words, poor people will only be will not be taxed on the first $10 of a clothing purchase. Well, now, let's just use a little common sense here. If you need $100 worth of clothing, you simply make 10 purchases for $9.99. Also, suppose suppose poor people are exempted for the first $1,000 on aluminum siding, and they need $5,000 to do their home. They simply make more purchases under the threshold amount. And likewise, a well-to-do person can walk up to somebody hanging on the street corner and say, "Here's some cash. Go in that store and buy me the latest iPod, and I'll give you $20." So, I mean, I've only listened to this for about an hour, and already I can see all sorts of ways around it. In terms of labor being taxed, I can see barbers going to people's homes or customers going to a barber's home. I mean, who would know whether somebody gives a haircut if it's done outside of a brick-and-mortar institution?
Well, you know, those are all very good points. The thing that my dad used to always caution me on when I would take him to task on various things when I was a kid, he said, don't ever let the perfect be the enemy of the good. And what we have is something that is absolutely horrible today. And what we're talking about is going to something that's not certainly not perfect, but it's better. And you're right, there will be people who will do this, but there's a couple of things that are interesting because until I heard it, I really wasn't aware. You know, Neil, in California, 90% of the sales tax is paid by 8% of the merchants. 90%. Now, when I first heard that from Ernie Dronenberg, I thought, that doesn't make sense. And then he explained, and of course it did make sense, because so many people are making purchases from the big stores, the big box stores of all kinds, the retail stores. They're buying cars, which are taxed. They're buying boats, all the big purchases. So you've got, in California, 90% of the sales tax being paid by 8% of the merchants. According to Ernie, the only type of evasion that 8% does is inadvertent, and the reason I say that is they're much more concerned with inventory control and stopping theft than they are with passing on a tax that they've collected from you. So what you've got is a situation under the sales tax that, yes, you're going to have that barber going out and cutting hair in somebody's home, and he's not going to charge the tax or charge as much of a premium for it. You're going to have that. Just like today you have guy, he's going out and doing it and he's not paying income tax. But what you are going to have is a system that takes the burden off you and Vernon and I and says you no longer in Congress can pass something under the table that we can't see. Because in the sales tax, you can make exceptions, you can screw things around, but everybody has to see it. And I go back to the Twinkie tax. You remember the Twinkie tax in California, fellows? It was the snack food tax that they put in.
Vaguely, that's a long time ago.
Yeah, it's a long time ago, but I think it's instructive because What it basically said is that the fellow at the gas station who's selling snacks, he had to determine instantly at the register if you were buying that can of peanuts to take home, in which case it would not be taxable, or if you were going to eat it now, in which case it was a snack and taxable. So what happened was everybody got so outraged that they made him repeal it. And that's because it was apparent. Now, most of the things the state does and the federal government do are what I call under the table. They're not under the table that you couldn't find them. But if you're not an experienced tax person, you're never going to find them.
Right. Now, I agree with that completely. And incidentally, I'm not looking for a perfect system. I'm for the fair tax and will do what I can to support it. All I'm saying is that eventually, well, for instance, bottom line, there's nothing in the world to stop politicians. And yes, it'll be transparent. But there's nothing to stop politicians from increasing the percentage of the fair tax or adding tax at additional levels, especially if a great scholar going back several hundred years said the death of democracy is imminent the moment the citizenry realizes they can vote themselves in public largesse.
Right.
And if the majority of Americans feel that it's going to be to their benefit by the government taxing industry at the wholesale level or something of that sort, then it'll probably happen. One more quick point,
sure.
And that is that under the law of human nature, we have a subset called unintended consequences. If a business person let's say something that's price-sensitive, like roofing, a person needs a new roof, they'll get three estimates and usually go with a lower bidder. Well, if a person is buying, let's say, new trucks and paying almost 30% on top of the purchase price, the businesses with obsolete equipment are going to be more competitive, and that will make business less efficient, particularly in world markets.
Brent, the only problem with that is for a business. I mean, what you're saying is correct if it was an individual, but a business, remember, doesn't pay the sales tax on any item that's used in production of its final product to the consumer. So that truck that the plumber bought, for example, or the roofer, he's not going to pay a sales tax on that if he uses it in his business. So you've got you've got a situation where if you really take, and I have done this, and you stack the way the fair tax treats the small business person to the big business person alongside the way the income tax treats them, they win in every way, but they don't lose in the sense that they don't have to pay the taxes that they do now, because when the trucker, or the plumber, or the roofer buys that truck, Vernon?
Yes.
Every single person who participated in making the truck had to pay a tax on their profits. The guy that made the tire had to pay a tax. Now, when you pay a tax, you have to increase the price of your product in order to make a profit.
Right.
You increase it more than the tax, right?
Incidentally, an example you used earlier about a painter. A painter is unlikely to say, listen, hire me to paint your home and I won't charge you the tax. That because the painter is buying materials,
yes.
Eventually it could come back to haunt them, sort of like a paper trail.
It does.
But it seems so simple to sidestep that, because if I was a painter, I could simply say, listen, Steve, buy your own paint. But
I'm going to pay the tax.
Yeah, if you
on the paint, but not on the labor. And the labor.
Of course, he can come in, and he can actually evade the tax, just like he can under the income tax right now. He can say to you, and this happens all the time. He can say to you, Neil, pay me cash, and I'll give you a discount. How many times have you heard that?
Lots.
That is the same thing. So we're not talking about a system that's going to catch the people who want to evade it. We're talking about a system, because of the way we make purchases now and the way we do our goods and services, that's going to capture much more of the money that's now being evaded.
Yeah, a couple things about the example of the painter, by the way, as you pointed out, is the painter only doesn't pay tax on that paint if they have a resale license, which tags them as someone that has not paid tax on that.
Right.
If the person having their house painted goes in to buy the paint, they pay the tax on it, correct?
Yes.
And so then they would pay the tax to the painter on his labor as well. And the other thing about the barber exam, you're absolutely right. We will always, as a species, come up with creative ways to avoid taxes. But when it becomes more of a pain in the tail end to avoid taxes than pay them, you know, for example, the barber there, if he has to drive to somebody's house so that they don't have to pay taxes, that's going to go show up as a higher cost in the haircut probably, and he might not be hired. So,
well, for decades, I have purchased anything major like a computer or whatever, always out of state to avoid the excessive California sales tax, and that's only about 8%. If I could save 24% by being clever, I'm going to be using a lot more methods than simply buying out of
state. I'm going to say something real quick here, because this is a lot of people don't realize this, is Neil is probably a radio name. Because under, just kidding, under California law, do you know that the law says that you're required to pay that sales tax even if you buy it out of state?
Right, it's a use tax.
Yeah, you're supposed to report it on your taxes. Now, most people don't know that and don't do that, but the state of California in its laws say that it is your responsibility if you don't pay the tax out of state, that at the end of the year when you do your state taxes, you're supposed to put that in on the form.
That's right.
But given the number of citizens and the number of transactions annually, I think it's impossible to police something like that.
But it's getting easier and easier with computers.
Yeah, it basically is. One of the things that I did, Neil, just to throw something as an aside, I gave a talk here about 2 months ago to the State Association of Sales Tax Collectors, trying to explain how this worked up in Seattle at their convention. And one of the things that they are, and in fact they've got legislation they're trying to push through Congress now that will do that, is they're going to have a reporting where when you buy the thing from Amazon and it ships to California, it puts you in a file of California purchasers, and it ships that file to California.
Yeah, they're getting very sophisticated about this.
Yeah, and that's basically what it's in the law right now, proposed.
Well, as much as I like, here's my final comment, as much as I like the fair tax, I see it, if it goes through, and I hope it does, I see it as the birth of widespread barter. You cut my kid's hair, and I'll cut your lawn.
You know, and I think it's true in a limited basis, but you're not going to get the guy at Sears to not charge you the sales tax and to figure out how he's going to get around it because you say you're going to take his kid to school. It's just not going to happen.
Neil, let me ask you a closing question on that one. Do you think it'll be any worse in terms of tax evasion than the current system?
No, I don't. Absolutely not.
I think that's the correct answer, too. Now, I think we all agree on that.
Hey, gentlemen.
Neil, thanks so much for your time there. Thanks for the call. 479-1080, 477-1340. Since time tends to get away from you on shows like this, I'm going to ask you the hard question right now. Okay? I sat down last night. The reason I was asked to do this show, above and beyond that I'm just a tremendous talk show host.
And you are.
I happen to think that there's some power in numbers, not that numbers are magical, but at least they give you a common basis from which to speak. So what I did is I did a couple calculations last night, okay?
Uh-huh.
So I said, okay, under the current tax system, if you make $50,000 a year, okay?
Uh-huh.
You're going to pay $38.25 as your share of the Social Security.
Right.
Figure a 15% tax rate, so that's $7,500, okay?
Uh-huh.
And so the total taxes that are going to be paid are $11,325.
Right.
Okay? Under the fair tax system, you have an annual income of $50,000. Your expendable income's $40,000 because they're going to collect $9,349. You can trust me on that.
Okay.
In other words, you've got to have the money to pay the tax, right?
Mm-hmm.
So you can't, if you spend $50,000, you got to have 23% more to spend above the $50,000 you earn.
Right.
Okay. So you know where I'm coming from.
Yeah, but don't forget the prebate.
Okay. Now that's coming in next.
Okay.
So you get the prebate. That means that the total taxes collected from your $50,000 is $5,065, as opposed to $11,000 under the other system. Now, you can carry that analogy out far, that example of the calculation out farther, and you can say, hey, well, you actually have more expendable income to spend because they're not collecting the 7.65%, correct?
Yes.
So you can jack, and I have assumed that you've spent all of the income you make
mm-hmm.
on taxable stuff, and I come up tremendously short in the amount of revenue raised.
Well, that's from an individual there, but there's a couple of things that come into this, and I think that's a very, very intelligent analysis of where it is, and that's what we're trying to get to on the website, to where people can do exactly what you did.
Yes, and I actually did it, too, for the next, I'll round this out, for the top 1%. who have a 27.25% tax rate, according to the IRS.
Mm-hmm.
And when you do the same calculations, you say that if they paid tax, this is assuming that they can't, you know, wiggle out of any taxes, because the bottom of the top percent goes down to $285,000. They would pay $92,000 in total taxes. Under the fair tax system, they'd pay $49,000. That's just short of half. It's
right.
About 40%. And for a revenue-hungry government, the question is that's a big chunk of money to make up, Steve.
It is. And basically, what you've got a couple of factors that come into it, because we've had people score this, what they call score it, by trying to figure out what would be revenue neutral.
Yes.
We've had people in the Congressional Budget Office. We've had the Tax Committee. We've had individual economists score it. And the numbers vary a bit, but they're all in that 21 to 25% range. And there's a couple of reasons for that. One is that there is a large amount of expenditures that would be captured. If you take the amount of gross spending, the amount of gross income,
okay.
You got a lot of people, according to the IRS, who are not paying the taxes they should be paying on their spending. That's just a fact. You know, sometimes they will admit 25%, sometimes they'll say 40% when they're trying to get money at the hearings.
Yes.
So you've got a large amount of money that's assumed you're going to start capturing a good portion of it. They're still assuming you're going to have evasion, but you're going to start capturing a good portion of it. You're also going to start capturing a lot of money that's not taxed today. For example, when somebody sends a TV over from Japan, Sony, for example, they have to have been pretty much brain dead to pay much U.S. tax, because they send it to an intermediate company at a price that allows for a very small profit when they sell it to the distribution, to Circuit City, for example. Circuit City will pay a tax on its profit, but all the profit on that TV is captured offshore. And effectively, they pay about 3% tax on imports. Under our proposal, the fair tax, that TV coming over here is suddenly going to be paying 23% tax, just like a product that was manufactured in the United States. So it levels the playing field. And what in effect happens is when you start pulling all these things together, that's why the economists come up and say, we can run the numbers on the national spending, and we run this percentage, and we assume, and I think it's 8 or 10% evasion, and we come up somewhere, and again, 21 to 25% has been pretty common for what they come up with. Now, your analysis is very accurate.
Clearly, I can see where you, because that is the figure I don't know. A more accurate way to do it is if you have the figures for total spending annually in the United States in terms of what's spent on everything.
Right.
And you look at what tax revenue that would generate, that tells you the total funds the government would take in, and you could see how that compares to what we're currently taking in.
Right.
But when you do the tax, in the examples I gave you, clearly people at the, because the top 50, the bottom 50% or top 50%, however you want to look at it, are down, that goes all the way down to around $26,000 a year. It's not very much.
Right.
You know, a lot of people don't realize this, and a lot of people don't realize, in my experience, when they talk about the rich in the top 1%, it's amazing. The top 1% goes all the way down to $285,000 a year.
The
Tax Foundation from the IRS figures of 2002.
Yeah.
I mean, people think, I grew up in a time where they had a program called The Millionaire in the 50s. And this guy was going around, he'd go around the country giving away $1 million, right?
Yes.
And that was considered a lot of money. $1 million today compared to 1955 is jump change.
It absolutely is. And many of your listeners are sitting in $1 million houses that they paid $100,000 for.
Well, listen, what I'm going to do two things. In 5 minutes, I've got to do my commercials. I didn't do them last hour. I want to put a little levity in here as we grapple with this, and I'm going to grab Jan, then we're going to do commercials, then we'll come back for Dave Allen and Roger. I have a listener that always sends me amusing faxes. So this was done in the handwriting of an old man.
Mm-hmm.
It's called Re the Affair Tax. Dear Mr. Vernon, I'm 92 years old and I love your show. I think you are on to something. If we charge a tax on affairs, we could increase our economic security and pay off the deficit. You are brilliant, and so is an affair tax. These godless hedonists are screwing like bunnies. Thanks, Bud Green.
That's very cute.
I need a, this guy is very clever. Yes, Jan, sir. You're on the air.
Hi, Vernon.
Hello.
Hi. Yes, and your speaker. I don't think that the rate should be so high. I think it lowers the incentive to spend. I like the fact that we would be taxing imports, and that would be bringing up some of the money. But, you know, what is all this tax for? It's to support our government. And the problem is our government's too big. We need to reduce our government, and then we could lower the rate also on this tax.
Well,
I think it should fluctuate.
Absolutely, Jan. And in fact, if you look at what we're talking about here, we're simply talking about a system for bringing in money. We're not talking about regulating how it's spent, which is what I think is a huge point, maybe the biggest point, which is what you're bringing up. But at the same time, with the fair tax, if you look at the various studies, some of them are on our website, fairtax.org, you will see that there are projections that over the next 10 years,
mm-hmm.
that even with inflation and a cost of living increase in the tax, amount of taxes needed, the fair tax rate could generate in 10 years the same amount of money but be down to 15%. Why?
So it does fluctuate.
It can go down. Now, the problem we have is if we do get this reform in place and we get rid of this suppressive income tax and all
mm-hmm.
these problems,
mm-hmm.
we then have to, as a nation, start holding these guys accountable. And so that when we do have this growth and we do have the ability to reduce the tax rate, that we do it. Now, at this point, Jan, I think your comments will probably have already answered my question, but do you believe if these guys got an extra $400 billion that they would spend it or pay the debt down?
Oh, they'd spend it.
Yeah,
today.
That's what I believe.
By the way, Jan, on their website, they deal with this in part in questions, frequently asked questions number 294 and 295. I highly recommend you all go to the website because there's tons of questions on there
uh-huh.
that they propose answers for. I have not seen this many facts, 13 pages worth.
Uh-huh. Well, the thing for me is, right now government's hurting and everybody's screaming. But now is the time to cut back. Now is the time to make government smaller. And, you know, it's just naturally happening.
Jan,
why don't we take advantage of that?
Do you want to hold over with me, please? Jan?
Okay.
Yeah, because I want to let you finish out. We got to do some commercials, y'all. We're going to do them right now. We're going to do them all in one shot, and we'll come back with Jan, Dave Allen, Roger, and take it from there. You're listening to the Saturday Special. My name is Vernon Bohr, a.k.a. Vernon, a.k.a. V-Cube, in for MZ.
November 25th, 1997, KSCO was granted a license by the Federal Communications Commission to serve the public interest as a public trustee until December 1st, 2005. Our license will expire on December 1st, 2005. We have filed an application for license renewal with the FCC. A copy of this application is available for public inspection during our regular business hours. It contains information concerning this station's performance during the last 8 years. Individuals who wish to advise the FCC of facts relating to our renewal application and to whether this station has operated in the public interest should file comments and petitions with the Commission by November 1st, 2005. Further information concerning the Commission's broadcast license renewal process is available at 2300 Portola Drive, Santa Cruz, California, 95062, or may be obtained from the FCC, Washington, D.C., 20554.
Hello, this is Bill Lambert of Lambert & Son Moving. I want to talk to you about advertising with KSCO and KOMY Radio. I have been amazed at the response to the radio ads, both with immediate calls from customers and for getting our company name out into the Santa Cruz and Monterey County areas. I have gotten a lot of work in Monterey County as well as Santa Cruz County from my radio ads. I have even gotten work from non-KSCO and KOMY listeners who had a friend or relative who were listeners and recommended Lambert & Son Moving. The staff at KSCO and KOMY is great, and they make creating a spot not only easy, but fun. Call KSCO and KOMY Radio, 475-1080, to find out more about advertising. Call 475-1080, KSCO and KOMY Radio.
Hi, this is Don Fredrickson from GotNet. GotNet specializes in business services. Whether you need a T1 or T3 or just a place to host your website, GotNet has a solution to fit your needs. GotNet offers server colocation and custom website development. We have e-commerce servers, streaming audio and video servers, and Cold Fusion and database servers available to handle your hosting needs. GotNet understands that businesses rely on the Internet, and we work hard to assure fast, reliable service. Call GotNet today at 460-2000. Food, shelter, clothing, net. GotNet.
Live and learn. Last year you waited too long to buy holiday gifts for your company's clients, and so you had to give them, well, peanuts. This year, play it smart with the help of JJ Sales Promotional Products. JJ can put your company's logo on thousands of great holiday gifts, from chocolates to wine accessories, hats to jackets, pens to mugs, and everything is on display for you to select from at JJ's colorful showroom. This year, call JJ Sales Promotional Products early for an appointment. 831-332-1300. Oh, be sure and ask JJ about the free chocolate. 332-1300.
Hi, this is Bill Graff, KSCO's production director. Look, I could give you a lot of hoo-ha about how great our computer system is here. Bottom line is this, we have enough computers in this building that if our computers didn't work right, we'd be in a world of hurt. And our computers generally work pretty well. And when they don't, we can give a call to Dennis and the guys at Day and Night Computer, and they come over and fix them right away. We don't have to wait any time of the day or night. You know, that's nice for a business like ours that's so heavily dependent on computers and technology. Look, you can do whatever you want. My advice to you, though, is to call Dennis if you have a computer question or a computer problem, or if you just want him to build you a computer. And best of all, he'll save you time and money, and I suppose that's what it's really all about. The more money you save and the less downtime you have, the more profitable your company will be. If you don't have a company, hey, time is money at home, too. Remember that. Talk to Day and Night Computers. Call 465-7340. That's 465-7340. Do yourself a favor.
Okay, back here with you?
You are.
Yes, we are. And Jan, I'm going to bring you up here. When I saw this too, when I went to the fair tax thing, I think the first shock is the 23%.
But yeah, that is shocking.
But when you sit down and do the numbers and look and see what that means, is that 23% covers both income tax and Social Security taxes you now pay? And so the numbers I gave before is that would add up on a $50,000 income to about a 23% tax rate. The way the fair tax system is structured right now, by the time you consider that you'd get all your income and look at the taxes collected plus the prebate, as he said, you pay $5,000 in taxes versus around $11,000 in taxes, or 10%. So even though
yeah.
you're paying a lot more in terms of the sales tax part, you're coming out a lot better.
Plus, everybody's paying.
Yes.
That's right.
Well, I like the fact that the flat tax will reduce, like the IRS and all this, but I think we really have to go after this. We have to make it less government so we get more freedom to return. Look at what they do now. They regulate what you can eat, what you can smoke, what you can do. This over-regulation will get worse if we don't do something now. And right now, if they have nothing to do, what do they do? They make more laws and rules. So I think it's fine if we
none
do the flat tax, we reduce the government, we reduce the percentage that everybody has to pay.
You know,
and if it works that way.
Yeah, the flat tax won't get rid of any of that, and that's what they actually deal with in their frequently asked questions is eternal vigilance, Jan. It's up to us to throw the bums out if that's what we
yeah,
need to do.
Yeah, my last comment is I just think that we have to get after these people and reduce their control on us.
I would agree 100%.
I like the idea of the flat tax, just as long as we work some of these other things out.
Listen.
And I'll let you go.
Thanks for the call.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. 479-1080, 477-1340. You know what I think we have happening here, Steve? It's real interesting. And that is because I was shocked by this, too, the 23%. But I think what it really addresses and brings to the forefront is how many hidden taxes they are and how unaware we are of what we are spending on taxes.
That's in exactly the point that was most attractive to me about this tax system for the same reason that Joan brought it up. And in fact, one of the things, Vernon, that happened to me back in 92, I won't mention the congressman's name.
Yes.
But he was on the Ways and Means Committee. I met with him and I explained the proposal. And after a couple of minutes, he said, wait a minute. You mean people are going to know how much tax they pay? His face literally turned white. He says, we'll have a revolt.
You know, you're right. I'm looking at my numbers again, because when it really comes out, when I sort them into things, your expendable income under the current system is $38,000. By the time you deal with the prebate, you actually have an expendable income of $44,000 on a $50,000 a year income.
Yeah, it's quite an improvement, but it also tells you, when you look at national spending and you look at what the tax would generate on based on that, how much is being not paid in taxes.
Absolutely. Listen, we're going to pick up Dave. You're on the air.
Hey, how's it hanging?
It's hanging down.
Look, we all know that Sony will pass on that 33% tax right to Johnny Lunch Bucket and Louis the Lettuce Picker. Get my drift? Just, you know, seeing that we're going to increase taxes on imports and yada yada sounds good, but just gets passed on. You know, the fact is, why are we so concerned with all these convoluted tax ideas? Why is it going to be so damn difficult?
Well, we're trying, actually, those to make it simpler.
Well, I've been listening for 2 hours. Those are respect, man. I appreciate what you're doing there, but I'm a pretty intelligent person. Even with my brain damage from my stroke, I'm going, what? Where do we go with this? Where are we?
Well,
I don't get it.
What we're trying to do is we're trying to make it as simple for you as the state sales tax is today. When you go make a purchase and you pay a state sales tax, you don't have to keep a record of that purchase. You don't have to file it away so you can sit down and spend 1 to 50 hours on April 15th working on this.
I got you.
You just pay the tax and you go down the road.
But now for people with lesser incomes, then they gotta go get a bean counter. And apply for these rebates.
Not at all.
No application, Dave.
No application. Here's the way it's going to work. And it's very, very simple. And one of the reasons it is going to work is because of computers. Everybody that has a Social Security number and has an address, and that's the only thing you have to be concerned about, is making sure that the government has your address, the correct address, is going to automatically be sent this amount of money. The only difference between the size of the checks is going to be, one, if you live in a certain areas where it's slightly higher, or two, your family size. That's it.
So that means that every transaction, each and every move will be tracked.
Not at all. Exactly the opposite.
Wait a minute. How is the government going to know I bought a tacos and a rebate?
They're not. You're going to get the rebate if you don't spend a dime. If you are one of those people who grows all your own food, who doesn't choose to have electricity, who doesn't choose to have anything other than what they themselves produce, and they live in a cabin somewhere, they're going to get the prebate just like I am when I go out and I buy all these things. We're all going to be treated equally, but when you go to make a purchase at the department store and you pay cash for it, is the government going to know what you bought, the California government? No. And when you do it under the federal sales tax, the same thing is true. There are no records. If you buy it with a credit card, of course there's a record.
Yeah, I know. The thing is, why look, this country has such a surplus, hundreds and hundreds of billions, with a B, billions of dollars that we throw away, piss away. We're facing here, we got to get a grip of this country. What we have here is the multinational corporate heads of state controlling the tax revenue. You know, the Treasury's pocketbook, and it's not right. But when we're spending hundreds of billions, like, for example, in Iraq, my daughter goes to Aptos High School. I had to write a check for art class. to buy paper and crayons? What
well,
the hell?
You know, the fact that you'd have to write
we're building schools in Iraq and highways. Our infrastructure is going to hell.
Well, that's a different issue, though.
I know, but what I'm saying is we have this country has so much wealth. Why are we going to figure out more ways to pull more off the underground economy? Look, everybody knows the underground economy is why this country stays healthy. Sure, somebody grows vegetables in their yard, they go to the farmer's market, they sell it for 50 cents a pound, make a few bucks, but guess what? Those bucks go down to Taco Bell for a snack. Those bucks go to some little kid in the neighborhood cutting the lawn for 20 bucks. You know what I'm saying?
Well,
all this stuff goes round and round, gets spent eventually. It's kind of like same reason why the government allows, you know,
Dave, this is the point. This is we have a system wherein taxes are going to be collected one way or another. We have a current system that collects taxes, and this is an alternate system that's been proposed as probably being more fair, more equitable to all people, and generating the same amount of revenue. Now, I agree with you about all the other stuff. Those are separate issues.
I know. I understand the tax system now sucks. It's very unfair. It's evil. It sucks. Basically, it's unconstitutional if you want to get down to it. It's never been ratified. This is the same old story we heard about now. We do need a new system, but what we really should have, and so I kind of like what Bruce had to say in Brookdale, believe it or not, he had a good idea. Friends, you buy a car, any car purchase, first $5,000 tax-free. Now, if you're a poor person, you buy a used car for $3,000 or $4,000, fine. If you're somebody wanting to buy a Mercedes SUV, like $80,000, well, the first $5,000 is free, the other $75,000 should pay taxes. That sounds fine.
But see, the way it is right now is you buy that used Mercedes under the current system that you're proposing, you're going to pay tax over and over and over every time that car turns. And this proposed system, it would be paid once the original purchase, correct, Steve?
That's correct.
In terms of getting government out of your pockets.
Right, what Bruce was saying, for example, about you get a flat deduction, like any car purchase up to $5,000, no tax. After that tax, after the $5,000 on the other, think car is $10,000. First $5,000 is for the house. Second $5,000 you taxed at. So somebody buys a yacht or an RV, too bad you pay tax on it.
You know what you can do, though? I mean, you can make any of these variations work under a consumption tax, and to the extent that it's a consumption tax and it's based on some logic like that, I don't really have a problem with it. But if you're going to go for a reform, why not go for a reform that's simplest? If you do it this way, you don't put anybody in the position at a retail level of having to make any decisions except pushing a button that says 23% tax. You give the people back their money through the prebate. And you can do that with these computers automatically. They can do transfers into your account. It's like almost not zero cost, but a very, very low cost if you have direct transfer. So why not do that as opposed to putting the burden on doing all this paperwork on the retailer? Why not just let him ring up the sale and let the government send that prebate back to you? And then instead of you having an incentive, this is what I object to under the present system. Congress will decide that they should give you an incentive on a car, but not on an appliance, because the lobbyist for the car industry was much better than the one for the appliance industry.
Right.
So why not eliminate all of that, put all those guys out of work, and make it simple?
Dave, I'm going to have to move on here. Before I drop you, I want to make one other comment. When you read the frequently asked questions, too, I think there are provisions in your fair tax that the people that are collecting the tax, the retailers and stuff, actually get some compensation for that.
Yeah, they should be able to get enough back to cover the cost of collecting.
And I've always been offended by retailers being unpaid tax collectors.
Well, I agree with you there.
And Dave, for our employers.
Dave, thanks so much for the call.
Okay, thanks. Bye.
Okay, 479-1080, 477-1340. Roger, thanks for your patience. You've been on a long time.
Hello?
Yes.
Okay, hi. Vernon,
yes.
This is a great show, and who said that economics can't be exciting?
Well, I was just looking at a lead-in, and I thought, well, at least I know I'd be covered by interesting.
Yeah, well, for me it's been exciting for years because it's affected me personally, this whole tax issue. Anyway, I agree with, you know, everything that Steve is saying, and I think it's a good idea, just that, as usual, the devil is in the details. And I'm concerned about the enforcement issues. And you've gone over some of those. So I want to just let you know kind of where I'm at and where I, you know, would see problems. I'm a small businessman. I run a restaurant in Santa Cruz. And, currently, you know, I've actually in the last 6 months I've had, a problem where, you know, my competitors, it's a specific type of restaurant and I have probably 15 competitors in the county, have actually hired people away by paying them under the table.
Absolutely.
Okay. And, you know, I actually spoke with the State Board of Equalization about this. I'm, you know, connected with, not connected, but I know fairly well the head of the SBE in Salinas' office. And he says, oh, yeah, it's, you know, we really can't do much about that, you know. And he agreed that, you know, well, if they're paying people under the table, they're basically, you know, the money has to come from somewheres, and it comes from skimming the till, essentially.
Right.
Now, what that's done, you know, and believe it or not, we don't do any of that. When I say believe it or not, it's, you know, not that I'm trying to be better. It's just, you know.
Following the rules.
Yeah, I'm following the rules, and sometimes lately I'm beginning to feel like a chump, you know, because but I don't want to have to live a lifestyle where I'm always having to watch my back for somebody,
right.
you know, turning me in or doing stuff like this. Anyway, so right now, whenever there's a sales tax increase, I basically think, okay, my competitors just got a raise.
Well, that's true.
You with me?
Yep.
Yes.
Because if they're skimming 50% of the till, and they've raised, you know, let's just say for the sake of argument, the tax rate 2%, well, they just got a 1% increase, okay, in their bottom line. So as far as enforcing this, you know, you've probably heard of Gresham's Law about the bad money driving out the good, right?
Yep.
Okay. Well, right now, I feel a little bit like, okay, the cheaters are making it difficult for me because they, you know, we have to charge a lot more money because we're paying all the payroll taxes, the work comp, everything legitimately.
Right.
And paying all the sales taxes we collect. Well, you know, once you have a 23% tax, and I'm not in disagreement with you about the, you know, any of the stuff you said. I just wonder how the heck they're going to enforce this because restaurant business is a lot of cash transactions, a lot of small ones, and it would still be very easy for anybody who wanted to cheat to basically skim this money, and, you know, at the register. Often, most of the time, these places are run, you know, it's a family operation. They have, you know, somebody that's in the family running the register. They do not use sophisticated POS systems. Sometimes it's all on paper.
No, I agree, and I think the short answer, Roger, is that unfortunately, the only way you're going to catch them is if you have a government that puts somebody next to the register every day, because you're still going to have people who cheat. But you have to, I think, look at it. And I know it's harder for you because it's no longer a theory.
Yeah, yeah.
This is something practical that's applying. The truth is that the only solution to this, and I think if you talk to your SBE person, he's going to reflect what Ernie said, is they're getting more sophisticated with their ability to do these computer models and predict sales tax.
Well, I know, and they basically have, you know, ratio analysis.
Yes.
And stuff, and I'm very familiar with that, but I'm also familiar with watching these same restaurateurs go over to San Jose to buy produce and various things, because I run into them over there when I go to do the same thing. I write a check. We have a clean audit trail. They haul out a wad of $100 bill.
Yeah, the short of that long answer, there's nothing, no way around that currently in time. But the upside may, in fact, be that people having more money to spend and with a big sign in your window saying, I pay my taxes, maybe you'll get legitimate business.
Well, yeah,
yeah,
because the guy that's coming in to buy a meal,
mm-hmm,
he's going to pay the tax whether he pays it to the guy, legitimate or illegitimate.
Mm-hmm.
And the guy, and also there's going to be a different incentive if they're not paying and doing all the collection of wages, because I hear this all over the country, Roger. It's not
good,
just in California.
Well,
about people who are being forced to pay under the table.
Right, right, right. Well,
Roger,
anyway, I think what you guys are doing is a great thing, getting the word out, and I have never logged on to fairtax.org. Is that correct?
Yes.
Yes, it is.
Yeah, I'm going to certainly be there, and, you know, I don't know if we can send you some money to help or not.
You
we would love it.
They've got the place to do that. Roger,
now,
thanks so much.
Now, is it tax-deductible?
Huh? Thanks for the call, Roger.
Wait, one quick comment.
Yes.
For everybody listening, there's a wonderful book called the for Good and Evil, The Impact of Taxes on the Course of Civilization.
Charles Adams.
You got it. Amazing stuff in there.
A wonderful
thanks,
man.
Thanks, Roger. Got it. I want to try and get three more people in here.
Sorry.
Nothing to be sorry about.
Okay.
It's just, that's the way it goes in this business. Thanks.
Bye.
Bye-bye. For Jim in Monterey, I'm going to go Jim, Russ, Gary. You're on the air.
Oh, yeah, I was wondering, I just wanted to let you know that here in Monterey County, we would be paying 30.5% tax.
Well, that's only because the state of California did not conform to the fair tax, because if they did, just in sales tax, and, you know, forget about them collecting the income tax, the rate would go down to 4%, not 8.5%. So what you're talking...
7.25%.
Well, 7.25. It'd go down maybe to 3.5%. I was using 8%.
Yeah, Jim, it turns out there again, I've run some of these calculations. Right now, in terms of not counting the sales tax in California, at $50,000 a year, you're paying 23%. You add that's 30%. With the fair tax system, when you run the numbers as laid out, you would be paying roughly 10% plus the 7%. So your taxes total would be roughly, well, actually under the 23% total.
Right.
Well, that sounds good to me as a taxpayer, but when the government comes and says that we have a serious shortfall and we need to reinstate the federal income tax plus keep the federal sales tax, then what am I going to do?
You're going to raise hell. Because
I'd like to raise hell about the income tax that we have now, but it's very difficult for me to do that.
We only have two choices. One is to become criminals and obey the law, which a lot of people are doing. They're voting with their feet, basically, and saying, no, you're not going to pick. You're not going to get money from me. Or we let these people know that they're there. And the truth of the matter is 10% of the people on the left are very sincere. 10% on the right are very sincere. That's why you have these votes. You know, you'll have 380 to 20 or something, or 40. But the other 80% just want to keep their jobs. And if
right.
you get on them, they'll listen.
Yeah, it's easier to say that than to do it, though. And I see this fair tax as being a burden laid primarily on the middle class, because the middle class is the one that's not going to receive the prebate.
No, they are.
They're the ones that are going to do the most of the consuming, because they're going to have the largest families.
But they're going to be
running the small businesses.
Jump.
It may be that's what Congress does. But under the present bill, that is not the case. It's just what Vernon said. The people who are going to benefit the most from this are the people making less than 80 grand a year, period.
Has this been tested anywhere in the world?
You know what? They have tried this type of a tax in Europe 30 years ago, and they quit doing it. I'll tell you why. Because they didn't have the ability to collect it. When I talked to the leading guy in Russia who actually put in the flat tax about doing a sales tax, he said, I would like to do it, but I've got to put a flat tax in first because we don't have the infrastructure like you do to collect it.
So they're planning to put in a flat tax and
they've already
add a sales
put a flat,
tax to that. That's what I'm worried about.
Let me,
one of the things you may be missing, Jim, is this rate covers the Social Security taxes that are currently collected as well.
Yes. But just a quick point, though, Jim. In Russia, they have announced that what they're going to try to do in 2009 is eliminate the flat tax and go to a sales tax. If you look on the Internet, it's on the news. That's what they would like to do. Why? Because they know that a consumption tax is going to make them more competitive in their own country and in the international economy.
Jim, thanks for the call. I got to go. Thanks. Appreciate your time. Going on, Russ, you're on the air.
Yeah, I've been a fair taxer for 6 years, and I think I've listened to all these people. They all kind of said they're for it. So what they ought to do is get behind it and push it. Let's, you know, just go to fairtax.org in Houston and, you know, back it and write their congressman.
You know, I think that people have a right to be skeptical because, you know, very little turns out as promised. That being said, is we know what kind of a tax system we have. And like I say, when you just start to look at the revenue, my main concern, as I said earlier, Steve, is when you run the numbers, you say, well, can it really generate enough revenue for what these guys are spending, given they say they need it? Now, there's a lot left out of my calculations in terms of things that are not, you know, purchases above $1 million, and in terms of what people in the higher income brackets don't pay in taxes right now.
Right. Just look at statistics of income, Vernon. You seem to be a guy that likes this on the web. Just type that in Google.
Yes.
And you'll see the national sales numbers, the national income numbers, and that's basically what all the economists use when they come up with their numbers.
Listen, we're going to pick up Gary here. Gary, and by the way, thanks for your call there, Russ. That was, and you're right on. Get behind it and do it. You're on the air, Gary.
Morning, Vernon. Great show.
Thanks.
Is this guy's name Steve?
Steve, yes.
Yeah, Steve. Over here in Monterey County, Monterey Peninsula, we've got a ton of antique dealers. All this is on new goods and services.
Yes.
None of those dealers or none of their customers will pay any tax, correct?
That's correct.
Isn't that a bunch of revenue gone bye-bye?
It's some revenue, but it's, again, you've got to follow a principle. The principle is you only tax items once. So, therefore, if you're going to apply that principle, it's got to take you where it leads. And, yes, there's going to be revenue lost there, but there's also going to be lots of revenue gained if you look at all of the economic forecast.
Okay.
Because you're going
I've been a general contractor for 20 years. I've paid between 18 to 20% of my gross total federal self-employment tax and state tax total. You're raising it now to 23%?
Now, I think if you go back and look at it, on what you spend and how you spend it with the prebate, I don't know your income. I'm not going to ask you to tell me.
Well, wait, let me throw something in real quick here, Steve, because the fact of the matter is, if you've been self-employed and you're paying your full self-employment taxes, you have to pay higher than that because your self-employment taxes alone are 15%.
Right.
And then you add your income taxes on top of that, it's whatever it comes out to be. Go ahead.
Because with this new system, all my costs aren't deductible anymore,
but they're
raised 23%.
No. I'm sorry. Nothing changes for you in terms of your cost. You're not going to pay a sales tax on one nail that you use in construction. It's only going to be
I have
tax,
to buy the material in order to use it.
But you get a resale permit. You don't pay the tax until...
So now there's some more paperwork I got to do.
Yeah, but compare that to the income tax. Compare that to withholding.
But, okay, now, example, cost. Right now, I just paid $839 to have a heater core replaced on my work truck. Yet, under this fair tax, since there is no business deduction,
how do I deduct the cost of that?
Plus, it gets raised 23%.
What happens is, you go in and you buy that with a resale permit, so you don't pay 23%. If you take these side by side, and I've done this, having done the tax thing for a number of years, you're going to find that for a business person, for myself as an attorney, my costs are going to be the same as they are under the income tax, except I'm not going to have the paperwork. I don't have to keep a record of that purchase that I made for the, the thing for the truck. I don't have to have that and justify it to the IRS. It's in business. I have my resale permit. I show them that. I get it without the tax. It's really simple. And if you lay them side by side, you're going to find that from a business point of view, the thing that benefits you the most is less paperwork. Your costs are the same.
Gary, I wish we had more time. We're right up against the clock here, but you should go to www.fairtax.org and look at the questions. You've raised some good points, but I think that the more you grapple with it, you find that it answers a lot of questions. Regarding
in
your
my opinion, Vernon,
yes.
Let's just go to a 10% straight flat tax, a 1 or 2% national sales tax, and the net assets of the United States government is $660 trillion. We're in debt $6.6 trillion. Let's have a garage sale.
That sounds great to me. Listen, Steve, thanks so much for your time. Gary, thanks for your call. We're out of time. We're a little over, so we're going to go directly to the news, I guess, at this point in time. My name is Vernon Bohr, a.k.a. Vernon, a.k.a. V-Cubed. Don't drop off. I'm going to try and pick up your call off the air, Steve, to thank you personally.
Not a problem. Thank you.
And I certainly appreciated having you as a guest.
Thank you, Vernon.
This is Vernon Cubed out for the Saturday special.
KSCO Santa Cruz, and now time for Fox News, already in progress.
Iraqi units in the cities we have cleared out.